The Zika virus is the latest malady to hit American shores. The mosquito-borne virus has made it to Florida, where 80 pregnant women have tested positive. Zika is transmittable from mother to fetus and often causes birth defects. Doctors have already confirmed one such birth in a Florida hospital. According to a survey from the Kaiser Foundation, most Americans want Congress to allocate more money to deal with Zika outbreaks in Florida and Puerto Rico, calling it important or a top priority. Funding, however, has been halted as lawmakers argue over money and language. This hour on the Joy Cardine Show, we'll explore the country's response to the Zika virus, the politics behind it, and consider if legislation will pass before Election Day or at all. Do you think we need to devote more funding for Zika? Why or why not? How important do you think it is for Congress to pass the Zika funding bill? And what do you think about the country's response to Zika so far? What concerns do you have about Zika virus? Join us at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email us talk@WPR.org, or you can post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. My guest is Scott L. Greer, an associate professor of global health management and policy at the University of Michigan School of Public Health. He's also a UW-Milwaukee alum. His piece, U.S. Response to Zika, Fragmented and Uneven, initially appeared in The Conversation and later in Scientific American. Good morning, Professor Greer, and welcome to the Joy Cardine Show.
Morning. It's great to be with you.
So let's get us up to date here. How has Zika affected the United States so far?
Well, the first thing is we don't completely know, because what we call surveillance in public health, which is looking for incidents of disease, is something that's dependent on our fragmented and highly localized and underfunded public health system. So it could be in places that we don't know about. What we know so far is that it's rampant in U.S. territories, particularly Puerto Rico. And we now have parts of Miami under the first ever domestic travel advisory that pregnant women and women who are thinking about being pregnant should avoid certain parts of Miami, including tourist-held Miami Beach. So, in other words, Zika is on our shores, Zika is being transmitted on our shores, and in roughly 9 months, we should start to see potentially the first cases of major birth defects due to it.
Well, we've already got a report of one such case in Florida, where there were 80 confirmed pregnant women with Zika, mm-hmm. and of course other confirmed cases as well. Looking at the way we have responded to Zika, you commented on our fragmented system. Talk a little bit about how that doesn't work.
So, it does work for a lot of purposes, but I said in television terms, this is parks and recreation more than contagion or outbreak. The U.S. is an extraordinarily fragmented public health system. We have about 90,000 local governments, many of which have some sort of a public health responsibility, ranging from running clinics to mosquito abatement districts.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially all of them are underfunded, because the kind of public health work you do, for example, forestalling Zika, is often really unglamorous. You know, it's hard to think of much that's less glamorous than looking for stagnant water, which is what a mosquito abatement district will do. And it's therefore very easy to underfund it. And so, for example, even the presence of mosquito abatement agencies around the country is extremely patchy, and a lot of the time it's a guy in a pickup truck. Miami-Dade County, huge jurisdiction, had 17 people working on mosquito abatement at the beginning of the year. In this fragmented system, there's a lot of people who need money and need expertise, and that means that the federal government, despite not formally really having that many relevant powers to dictate a Zika response, has a lot of authority if it actually tries to use it, meaning if the federal government brings money and advice, people tend to listen.
Well, and then you have occasionally some really unfortunate things happening as some local agencies try to deal with this, and all of a sudden you have pictures on Facebook of millions of honeybees dead, and things like that then kind of skew the discussion away from public health. So we've got this fragmented system. You mentioned that these mosquito control districts are often underfunded because they're not real visible. It's not something we think about a lot, except when a mosquito is biting us. But let's talk a little bit about how often underfunding is an issue when it comes to public health generally.
It is a big issue. The numbers are hard to tell. The numbers take a lot of effort to get, but we, for example, cut in absolute numbers the public health workforce in the U.S. by 4% between 2010 and 2013. So we've actually been reducing the number of people working in any aspect of public health. Basically, public health funding took a terrible beating, like most public sector funding, after the Great Recession started in 2008, and it hasn't really come back. And you can see how, out of all the deferred maintenance and things that people would like to do, it's easy to see how a local government might say we're going to fix the potholes or we're going to hire police sooner than saying we're going to hire an epidemiologist or we're going to start trying to build up our vector control capacities.
And I think in probably, I don't know if it's true everywhere else, but I know in Wisconsin, a lot of counties, which is where public health is often administered, a lot of services that were offered in the public health office have been privatized. They've been farmed out to contractors. Is that a trend we've seen elsewhere in public health?
It is, and frequently the limitation, Wisconsin is a reasonably well-funded public health system. Frequently the limitation is that they don't spend enough money to get real private sector interest.
Mm-hmm.
There's the problem with using contractors is that if I employ you, I can say drop everything and go work on Zika. If I have a contract with you to provide a service, well, let's get our lawyers and renegotiate the contract.
Right. So who is actually in charge when there's a public health crisis like the Zika virus?
Constitutionally, the governors are the key figures because local governments depend on states, and the Constitution, the 10th Amendment, says that states have the core political powers, they're called police powers in the legal jargon, to deal with things like public health, and states have an enormous amount of authority if they want to use it.
Mm-hmm.
The federal government, then, has border control authority. It has, like I said, the authority of its scientific agencies, which is enormous relative to the states, and it can have a lot of money. It's also the states are not coordinated internally necessarily. The federal government is certainly not coordinated internally. And so the people who tend to be the hub of it, who really take the actions, are the executives, the governors, and the president. For example, during Ebola, there was sort of no coherent federal response until the president intervened and created a new Ebola czar, a man named Ron Klein, whose job was to exert the authority of the president to make the bureaucracies play well with each other.
What have the governors been doing when it comes to Zika?
The main governor who's been out in front responding is Rick Scott of Florida, who is doing, in a sense, exactly what somebody in an incredibly exposed state should be doing, which is scraping around looking for funding to try and address Zika, including through mosquito abatement. And he's loudly pressing Washington for more money and more guidance. In the background, the National Governors Association has been working with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, to develop Zika response plans and figure out the differing vulnerabilities of states. And about half the states in the U.S. conceivably could have a real Zika problem if they're unlucky.
Mm. Half. Wow. That's a lot.
That's just where you find the relevant mosquito. So in principle, southern Indiana, for example, you can find the Aedes aegypti mosquito. I'm not particularly worried about Zika outbreaks in southern Indiana, but if you're a pregnant woman and you get bitten, you might worry.
And do we know that is Zika transferable from one person to another? I think I believe I've read that it is, but I don't want to state that definitively.
We're learning a lot about this virus very quickly, and the virus seems to be keeping up with us by mutating. So it's transferable by the mosquitoes, clearly. It seems to be a sexually transmitted virus, and now we're debating whether it can be transmitted by tears. This is a very interesting and clever virus, and we have a lot to learn about it.
Mm-hmm. We're just about at news time. I don't want to get into a big news subject, but in fact, I tell you what, when we're going to take a break for the news in just a moment here. When we come back, we've talked about governors and we've talked about local health officials and so forth, but right now the action is in Congress, and I want to talk about what's going on in Congress with some kind of funding for federal programs to deal with the Zika virus, which clearly is not going to be any respecter of municipal or state boundaries. So it will very shortly become a federal problem because it will be in multiple states, and in fact, it already is. So let's talk about what Congress is doing when we return. The Zika virus on our minds this hour on the Joy Cardine Show. We'll continue our discussion about the politics of Zika with Scott Greer. And with you at 800-642-1234, talk at WPR.org, or on Facebook, look for the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. First, this news from NPR and WPR. John Munson in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about Zika and the fact that funding at the federal level is halted in Congress. My guest is the University of Michigan's Scott Greer. Do you think we need to devote more funding for Zika? Why or why not? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. John is calling us from Madison. Let's take that call first. John, hello.
Yeah, well, one of my concerns about Zika is the extent of threat this poses to the entire population, not just the newborn. We all know that if a pregnant woman gets Zika, there is a certain percentage of them that will give birth to newborns that have small heads, microcephaly, and also stunted brains and intellectual capacity. But it's also been reported in the literature that the virus affects adult brains with serious effects. And I wonder, do we have any literature that states or gives a projection as far as how much threat this poses to the adult that gets mosquito bite with Zika?
Scott?
So far, we're finding out about this virus very quickly. Like I said, we don't know a great deal. It was an obscure virus in the French Pacific a year ago. But it does. We know that it can cause a syndrome that's basically temporary paralysis in a small number of people, and that can turn into permanent paralysis. And we're starting to learn that it does seem to, as John said, have some sort of long-term effect on the brains of some of the people who've had it. And this is what's kind of frightening, is we don't know. We don't know the exact odds that you're going to get temporary or permanent paralysis. And we don't know the odds that some other form of lasting brain damage is going to happen. So potentially this virus is more frightening still than we know from these awful birth defect images. And if it's hard to give advice if it's hard to give practical advice, such as don't go to Miami if you might be pregnant, it's even harder to give advice that amounts to don't live in Miami.
Yeah, that would be a tough one. You can't just move away from where all the mosquitoes are. Otherwise, I think we'd all be living in Arizona. Let's take another call. John, thanks for that call. Renee is with us next in Twin Lakes. Renee, go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering if the guest was going to address. I have read several articles that say that Zika has been around for decades and that microcephaly is just a new thing that's starting, and Zika is being to blame for it, and that Zika only, you know, in the past decades has only produced, like, flu symptoms for people. And so I was wondering, I'm driving, so I don't have my references with me, but there's several good references, too, that you can look up about that. And I was wondering what he has to say about that.
Looks pretty strongly like Zika is responsible for this. The problem is that we hadn't had a really good Zika outbreak in a large population with access to decent health care at all until we had it in the northeast of Brazil about a year ago. And it was therefore in the northeast of Brazil that this interesting epidemic of kind of a flu-like disease got put together by obstetricians with the babies with microcephaly that they were seeing. Now, there's a lot of people who don't like this argument, who, for example, think that it's an effort by drug companies or pharmaceutical companies to, you know, sell various cures of some sort. But it looks pretty solid that there's an association between Zika and microcephaly as a birth defect if the woman, while pregnant or even possibly before she got pregnant, suffered from Zika.
You said earlier that this had been a really obscure disease. Do you know how it suddenly got kind of much bigger? I mean, how did this suddenly become a much more widespread problem?
It's like Ebola in that no one really cared when it was in very, very remote places with small populations that didn't travel a lot. So when it was basically confined to the French Pacific, that was a problem for the French Pacific. In the same way that when Ebola was confined to the jungles of northern Congo, it was kind of a Congolese problem. It's when it gets out into a bigger population and a population that travels and has international airports that you really start to worry. And that's what happened when somehow, they think it might have been a sporting event, Zika got transferred from the sparsely populated French South Pacific territories to northeastern Brazil, and from there pretty rapidly to a large part of the world. The other problem is Zika is mutating, so there's already several strains globally, and that's why we have these kind of confusions about, is it sexually transmitted, what exactly does it do to adult victims, and so forth.
800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Okay, so we know that Zika is a problem. Here's another, and that is funding. We touched on this just before the news. I kind of teased to it, so let's talk about it. We've got Congress, which has had a Zika funding bill in front of it for months and hasn't been able to get it passed. So let's talk about why we have not had any action at the federal level. What's going on in Congress?
The short version is this is how the American federal government works, and it's particularly how the American government works in an election year. So the story, briefly, is that the Obama administration put down a $1.9 billion Zika funding request early in the year. And for context, that's about what the Department of Defense spends in 8 hours. And this money was going to be a mixture of funding to the National Institutes of Health to research a vaccine, which is what we really want and need. That's going to be the ultimate solution. And support mostly through the Centers for Disease Control and global health agencies to try and reduce the immediate effects, things like assistance with birth control and mosquito nets and other ways to try and simply reduce the odds of people being bitten by the relevant mosquito. The House and the Senate each then produced their own version of the bill, which shared two characteristics, one of which is that they didn't allocate as much money as the administration wanted, and the other of which is that they hung ornamental things that didn't, on the face of it, have a lot to do with Zika on it. For the most notorious being an effort to allow people to fly Confederate flags in U.S. military cemeteries. So what's going on there is that the Republicans are saying, I'm a Republican in an election year. I don't have a lot of incentive to vote a large new spending item to an administration that I don't trust. So I'm going to put a high price on it. If the Democrats give me what I want, for example, making sure that Planned Parenthood is not eligible for birth control support in Puerto Rico, then I'll have a win. And if the Democrats don't give me what I want, then it's their president who will be blamed for Zika running out of control. Not bad in an election year. And they will also, I'll also be able to blame them for having torpedoed the bill. And that's exactly what happened. For example, in the Senate, they've been recurrently bringing up, it's under Republican leadership, they've been recurrently bringing up this relatively small funding package, which includes pretty strict language making sure that you can't give money to address Zika to Planned Parenthood. Democrats filibuster it, so when Republicans say that Democrats are blocking the bill that the president says he wants, they're actually quite right. Democrats say, give us a clean Zika funding bill that doesn't include Planned Parenthood and Confederate military ceremonies and does include the money. The result is that both sides, and politicians are good at this, have managed to create a situation where they can blame the other for blocking the funding. The administration, which doesn't have the luxury of doing this because they are the executive, has been essentially looking in the sofa for change. So they've been diverting all sorts of funding, Ebola funding, all sorts of public health funding, to keep vaccine research and CDC response going so that we're doing something. The problem is that when the administration keeps on spending money on vaccines and Ebola response despite not getting its money, a lot of people in Congress think, oh, you lied. You didn't actually need the money.
Yeah. How much money are we talking about here? I mean, even if the Senate and the House agreed, let's say that the Senate got a bill passed, then it has to go to the House, and the House members have already said, without a Planned Parenthood thing in here, we aren't going it. Of course, Paul Ryan says there's no Planned Parenthood language in the bill. And it kind of depends on how you read it, but you've got House members saying, no, without what we want, you're not getting a bill, we're just not voting for it.
And that could quite possibly remain the situation until after the election on November 8th. Ebola was a nice harbinger of this, in which they, meaning especially the opposition party, the Republicans, but both parties used Ebola to club each other until the election. And then almost immediately afterward, in the lame duck session, got together and sang Kumbaya and voted a fairly substantial Ebola package, which is actually now being raided to deal with Zika. So this is the main thing that politicians have to do right now is get reelected. And that means they're not going to do anything that offends their voters. And Republicans, who would like to make significant gains, are not going to go out of their way to do Democrats and the White House a favor. Democrats, meanwhile, are not, when they're not selling out their base, Democrats are not going to accept anything that looks like a threat to Planned Parenthood. And the Confederate military flags is just a perfect kind of election year, literally flag-waving issue.
Mm-hmm. So if let's say we did get a bill passed, how much money are they talking about, and would it be enough?
$1.9 billion is the administration request. The Senate bill versions are about half of that. The House versions are about a third of that. The answer is no, because you introduce this really bad choice, which is what we need is a vaccine. That's how you deal with a viral disease like this. You vaccinate people and you're done. Vaccine research is expensive, and it's not to the point where the commercial drug companies are willing to take it forward on their own budget. So do you do that, or do you try to do something right now to slow its spread and protect people against it? For example, education that you should have insect repellent, and then actually giving people insect repellent. So you're right now forcing a choice between trying to solve the problem 5 years out and trying to address the problem and reduce it somehow right now. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's a choice we want to be making as a country for an amount of money that is what the Pentagon spends in 8 hours.
Here's a comment from Ryan on Facebook, who writes, "Unfortunately, unless there's public outcry to move politics, despite the current presidential campaign fatigue, I don't see much change to this due to not-in-my-backyard mentality. As Zika spreads and more people are affected, then Congress might consider getting involved. State and local governments have limited resources to do the things they already have needs to do, with too few resources to do them. We have a health system.
We
have a health system that you've pointed out is already under a great deal of stress, and this is this could be the straw that broke the camel's back in a way. You in a conversation with the producer Brianne Chasseau, you called Zika a time bomb. What do you mean by that?
If you think a little bit about Zika. We've been keeping this on a relatively high level, but when you start to think about some of the implications, take, for example, the advice, which is good advice, of don't get pregnant. Well, first of all, 58% of the pregnancies in Florida are unplanned. So obviously there's a lot of people who have trouble taking that advice. But what does that advice mean? It means birth control. It will frequently mean abortion. It might mean abortion after screening to see if the baby shows signs of a major birth defect. You think about it some more. You think, what are some of the obstacles to it being practical? Well, what about domestic violence? What about bad relationships? What about rape? So Zika immediately takes us into some extremely hot territories to do with the morality of sex and life. At the same time, Zika is a Latin American virus. The reason that it's broken out in Miami is that Miami is an enormous travel hub for Latin America. So in an election season where we've been discussing migration and not always in particularly enlightened terms, it would take a couple of good tweets from high-profile politicians to start to turn this into a very big migration issue. And I think everyone in politics knows that the politics of Zika will change instantly if Donald Trump takes an interest in the virus.
Well, how has this played out so far on the campaign trail? I mean, have Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton talked about Zika at all?
Trump was caught off guard with the question, and he basically said that Governor Rick Scott of Florida has got it in hand. The governor of Florida doesn't seem to think that. He wants federal money, but Trump has not put this together in a way that contributes to his campaign. Hillary Clinton basically says that the administration has the right idea and she supports the request. The main people who have been out taking public stances on the disease specifically are, unsurprisingly, politicians from Florida, because, if nothing else, their state's a tourist magnet, and telling every woman before menopause that they should avoid the state's not going to do Florida's economy much good.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still being relatively rational, but the day we start having a really good conversation about abortion or immigration is the day that the discussion is not going to take a turn for the better.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this story has been out there in the news for weeks, months, and yet it doesn't really seem to have penetrated too far into the public consciousness. Why isn't Zika getting more attention than it has?
Present company accepted, the media tends to take its cues from political elites. So going back to our recent Ebola events, it was very clear that the rise and fall of the disease of Ebola in the United States, let alone in Africa, was basically driven by its instrumentalized use by political elites. So when Republicans started to discover that it was a good campaigning issue, and like Zika, Ebola arose during an election season in which Republicans were seeking to make gains at the expense of Democrats. This isn't a partisan thing. This is just that we've had a Democratic president in office. The Republicans lit upon it, discovered that it was a really good issue because it implied a failure of border security by President Obama. It implied Obama taking the interests of other countries more seriously than our own. And they ran with it. And you can count that in a bunch of ways. Segments on Fox News basically peaked and were explicitly political in the month before the election and then dropped off despite the fact that the disease hadn't dropped off. Campaign ads were full of people in white biohazard suits. So what will cause people to really talk about Zika in a serious way? They won't necessarily talk about it in a serious way. But what will cause a lot of conversation about Zika? Typically the answer is one of the two political parties finds it takes off as a thing to use against the other.
Mm. We're talking about Zika virus and the funding needed to combat it. We need a vaccine, my guest says, and vaccines cost a lot of money. Congress seems to be dragging its heels. No big surprise there. They apparently trouble even agreeing on maybe what to have for breakfast. I don't know. Sometimes that's the way it looks to those of us looking in from the outside. Wondering what you think. Do you think we need to devote more funding for Zika? Why or why not? How important is it, do you think, that it is that Congress get this thing done? And what do you think about our response to Zika virus so far? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. You can email us. The address is talk@WPR.org. Or you can post a comment or a question to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. My guest and I will be back in just a moment to talk some more about this situation. Scott Greer is with me from the University of Michigan School of Public Health. And we'll continue our conversation after the news. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. John Munson in for Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the politics of Zika with Scott Greer from the University of Michigan's School of Public Health. Scott, we have some phone calls here. Let's take a few. Jack is with us in Milwaukee. Jack, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. I guess I can't even believe that this has become, or that this is a political issue. I mean, when you think of what government needs to do is to protect us, and we've got the Zika virus coming in Florida, and children are being born with microencephaly, and we're having a discussion about whether or not to protect us. Of course we need federal funding. I guess that's all I have to say.
Thanks, Jack. Scott?
As a public health researcher, I think Jack's exactly right. As a political scientist, which I also am, that's typically, though, not how the U.S. political system is going to work, because it essentially involves asking congressional Republicans to trust the administration and do something where the credit's going to rebound to President Obama. And this is a very low-trust political system we're working in right now, which is why if they don't do it at the end of the month in a continuing budget resolution, we probably have to wait until mid-November in the lame duck section to get any funding.
Mm-hmm. 800-642-1234. Thanks for that call. Let's go next to Paul in Slinger. Paul, thanks for joining us on the Joy Cardine Show today.
The Congress will have to act rapidly because if this spreads across the southern states of the United States, the disease that the infant, the fetus will contract, the parents will turn it over to the state government to support this or provide the services needed for this brain-damaged child. The states will go bankrupt. It will cost several million dollars probably to take this child into an institution and provide all the necessary services that it will need. So we need a massive birth control enlightenment program across the southern United States.
Mm-hmm. Paul, thanks for the call. Scott, how likely do you think it is that we would launch a massive birth control enlightenment program in the southern states?
It's highly unlikely because southern state governments would have a say in it, and they're mostly some of the most conservative jurisdictions in the United States. The point about the short-termism is something, though, because we basically know what's going to happen to the families of the kids born with serious birth defects. They're going to require enormously expensive care for a very long time, both home care and also medical care. And after the process of essentially bankrupting the family, which is necessary for Medicaid eligibility in states that haven't expanded Medicaid with Obamacare, once the family is essentially impoverished, then the child will essentially become dependent for care on the public sector. So for want of relatively small amounts of money to invest in vaccines and mosquito abatement, we're going to end up caring for some very expensive children for quite a long time. So from a budgetary point of view, this is really, really not rational.
Benjamin Franklin famously said, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And I think there was also a famous commercial that says, you can pay me now or you can pay me later. Either way, I think the sentiment is the same. Hey, here's a comment, though, from Gary on Facebook with a little bit of a different perspective on this, and I wanted to make sure we got this out there. Gary says, yes, Zika is an emergency, and an appropriate response needs to be funded. However, it doesn't take more money going to government to fund it. Governments need to prioritize their spending and fund the most important with the money they have, just like we all do when the water heater or car transmission craps out. Allocate money for that and take it away from the beer and chip fund or whatever. Gary also says, find a way to get more efficient, allocate money to the most important items, close down some bureaucracies, and get it done within the currently allocated funding. So Gary doesn't want to see any budget increases going to Zika. He wants us to find the money that is already there somewhere and spend that. That's kind of what's going on now with the Ebola funding, isn't it?
That is what's going on. But the key thing is, I agree with Gary, I think everyone does, but the people who have to do it is Congress. Congress writes the budget. Congress allocated X number of dollars for communicable diseases and Y number of dollars for research based on a set of assumptions about what we needed, and then Zika came along. And in terms of the fat in the federal government, we've been cutting federal workforce. We've been cutting workforce across state and local government as well for a long time now, almost 10 years. So we're to the point where the federal government could be best regarded as an insurance company with an army. The federal budget is overwhelmingly made up of Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. And everything else that we notice, from the Highway Trust Fund to the national parks to the CDC, is a very small slice of what the federal government spends. We've made that political decision, but it means that most of the federal agencies are actually stretched very, very thinly already. And you see that in the continuing job losses in the public health workforce. Mm-hmm. And as we said in response to the previous call, this is a gamble that we don't need to prevent disease outbreaks. And if we fail to prevent disease outbreaks, then we end up with a larger Medicaid budget. We'll have made our decision that the federal government is more of a health insurance company and less of a government.
And speaking of Ebola, did we learn anything from combating Ebola? And can any of that knowledge be applied to fighting the Zika virus?
The thing about Ebola is that it's not ever going to be endemic in the United States. Just we don't have the animals to serve as a reservoir to keep the virus when it's not in the humans. So the threat with Ebola was always in two places. One, it was in hospitals. That was where the very small number of U.S. cases of people catching Ebola were located. And it was in Africa. So right now what's going on is one of the sources of money that they're plundering to get Zika money is money that was supposed to be spent in Africa to make sure that Ebola doesn't become endemic in the big cities of West Africa. Because if Ebola does become endemic in a huge city like Lagos, Nigeria, or Accra, Ghana, then we're going to be in a world where every airplane coming in might potentially have somebody with Ebola. And that's a world we don't want to live in.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the budget we're cutting right now in order to do something about Zika, which is already on our shores. So this is a really ugly decision to be making, and it's why a lot of people want Congress to do what Gary said and prioritize.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another call. Jacob is with us from Whitewater next. Jacob, hello.
Hello. This is a great conversation. I came in a little late, but my question is about what are South American governments doing in comparison to what the U.S. government has done and is planning to do? Are they doing an adequate job of keeping the virus at least under control to some degree? Are we following a plan that's going to be similar to theirs? Is our proposal in government much larger than what they're proposing, and therefore maybe that's why there's some pushback? Just wondering what the other countries that are dealing with the virus kind of have done, are doing, and what our response is in comparison. Thank you.
That's a great question. There's a couple of answers. One is that a lot of these countries are poor. There's no realistic world in which El Salvador finances a vaccine for anything. So there's a sense in which if the U.S. doesn't do it, who will? The other rich countries, Japan, Europe, they're not really going to have a Zika problem. We're the ones who have both the money and the problem. Secondly, what can we do in the meantime? What can we do until there's a vaccine? Well, Zika is substantially a disease of the poor. So the best way to avoid suffering from Zika is to have an air-conditioned house with screens, because you can close the windows. And if you think about the poverty in Northeast Brazil or some of the poorer Latin American states, such as in Central America, that's a really big ask. So the Obama administration's budget request was for really humble things: mosquito netting, screens that you can give to the poor to try and do something about the fact that mosquitoes can come in and out of their houses easily. And those are really the requests that you make for Latin America, to try to make it easier for all of us, but especially pregnant women, to avoid getting bitten by a mosquito. So in the U.S., we're fortunate in that most of us do have screens and air conditioning, although unfortunately the populations who are too poor to have them are concentrated along the Gulf Coast, where the mosquitoes also are concentrated. But in Latin America, it's about how to avoid it. And if it sounds slightly pathetic to you that we're talking about mosquito netting, that's actually sort of accurate. The solution is one that's not really close, which is a wealthy population with air conditioning on their houses.
Mm-hmm.
The other problem is that a lot of Latin American countries are very socially conservative. So abortion is flat out illegal in a lot of them. And that's an obvious way a lot of women would think about dealing with it. Contraception is extremely hard to get or unavailable in most of them. So when you tell women not to get pregnant in some of the most macho countries in the world with high rates of sexual violence, there's no contraception, there's no access to abortion, and there's no screens on the house, a lot of these countries are actually just basically going to give up.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like there's actually a facility to look after kids with microcephaly.
Jacob, thanks for the call. We're almost out of time, Scott, so here's our last question. What's your hope for the future of dealing with this virus? Is Congress going to get anything done? Probably not before the election, but maybe by the end of the year?
Zika is upon us, right? This isn't a warning that Zika's coming. This is a Zika is here. We blew our one-year advance notice, and I hope somebody gets reelected based on it. So now we hope that at the end of the month, they fold a serious Zika appropriation into the continuing resolution that will prevent the government shutting down. Otherwise, we hope that the lame duck session, as it was with Ebola, turns into an opportunity to stop campaigning and address our problems.
Okay. Well, that's where we'll have to leave it. Thank you, Scott. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
That was Scott Greer. He's Associate Professor of Global Health Management and Policy at the University of Michigan School of Public Health and, by the way, a UW-Milwaukee alumnus. His piece, U.S. Response to Zika, Fragmented and Uneven, initially appeared in The Conversation and later in Scientific American. The Joy Cardine Show is produced by Brianne Chasso and Niaja Ellison. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.